Thanks be to God who says, come to me and I will give you rest. The God who says, when you are weighed down with the turmoils and the difficulties of this world, it's safe here. The God that says, when you are riddled with guilt and pain and the weight of the world is on your shoulders because of your very own actions and your very own sin, it's safe here. My forgiveness for you is free. My blessing for you is abundant. I will protect you.
You're listening to Opening the Bible with Dr. Nick Gatzke, Senior Pastor of Old North Church in Canfield, Ohio. I'm your host, Brian Dolan. Today we get on to part two of a message from Pastor Nick on the Book of Ruth called Moving from Empty to Full. And you know, we've encountered so much, Pastor, that Ruth is just having a terrible time. And I think so many times in our lives, we are just stuck. We don't know what to do, so we're looking for a big answer. What do we do when we find ourselves in her kind of situation?
You're right, Brian. The dynamics of life that become incredibly difficult for us can become paralyzing for us as well. And I think we've all experienced that, haven't we? We've all experienced something hard where it feels like life is moving so fast, or we feel like the situation is so complicated that we are paralyzed. We don't know what to do. And one of the things that Ruth shows us through her simple obedience is when you don't know what to do, do the next right thing. Whatever the next right thing is, that's what you're supposed to do. And when you do that, God has this incredible way of providing in ways that you can't see possible and ministering to your soul in a way that you didn't think would even be real, or changing your situation in a way that becomes incredibly surprising to you. And that's what happens to Ruth.
But you know what we want, Pastor, is we want God to tell us what to do. What is the big thing that's going to fix this? And then we wait.
Yeah, we wait through that big breakthrough moment or that divine revelation. And God doesn't always give us that. He gives us everything we need in His Word. And so as we grow in knowledge of Him and what is the right things to do, what constitutes righteousness, we exercise wisdom and we're able to see what those next right things are.
And it sounds like it's not even necessarily anything significant or large. It could be as simple as get up and go to work today.
And for Ruth, it is care for my mother-in-law and figure out how we're going to eat today and continue to do the next right thing.
Let's take a listen now to Pastor Nick's message here, again called Moving from Empty to Full, Part 2.
God provides. He provides for Ruth and Naomi. We see that God not only provides for Ruth and Naomi, but we also see that God blesses them. And He blesses them in this next part of the story through the man named Boaz. Look with me at verse 8. Boaz has now come to the field. He's asked about Ruth, and he approaches her. He says to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you're thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn." Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and she said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes, that you should take notice of me, since I'm a foreigner?" But Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and come to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given to you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." And she said, "I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants." And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here and eat bread and dip your morsel in the wine." And so she sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her the roasted grain, and she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. And when she rose to glean, Boaz instructed the young men, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And also pull out some from the bundles for her, and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her." As Ruth works the field, Boaz, the master comes to take notice of her. Luck? I don't think so. This is a classic case of God working behind the scenes. And as a little rabbit trail on that note, it is interesting to me as a Christian that we so often assume that God isn't working behind the scenes when we don't see it or when we don't feel it. We think that, well, clearly God must be absent. I mean, how arrogant is it to think that the God of the universe, who can do whatever he wants, whenever he wants, however he wants, somehow is obligated to show us everything that he does when he does it? It's an incredibly arrogant posture to take, but yet we all fall prey to that very temptation. If I don't see it or if I don't feel it, God must be absent. But indeed, we see here that part of the life of faith is trusting that even when we don't see or feel, that he is working behind the scenes to accomplish his purpose and to care for his people. And we call this providence. Providence is God's direction and care for his people. Now, that seemed to be sort of one of the natural reoccurring themes that we had in our last sermon series, so we won't go into it at great length. But we see here, again, that this time God uses this person of Boaz to exercise this type of providential care. Boaz comes on the scene. He notices the foreigner, and immediately he talks to her. And what comes next is an incredible sense of increasing generosity to a woman who doesn't deserve it, number one, and number two, who has no claim over the types of things that he's about to do to her. I see at least seven forms of generosity. Look with me, verse 7. He allows her to glean the field in the first place. It was not her right. She needed to ask permission. Verse 8, he allows her to stay in the field. And what we see is that he's going to allow her to stay in the field for 2 months. Verses 8 and 9, he allows her to glean close to the women without being kicked out under the threat of the men. So the men would function as sort of the bodyguards or the gatekeepers of this field. And if anybody was there that wasn't supposed to be there, they would get the left foot of fellowship. And the women following behind would come up, and those gleaning were supposed to be back farther. He's saying, stay with my women, i.e., take the choicest of the gleanings. Verse 9, he allows her to drink from the men's water source. Verse 14, he invites her to eat with them until she's satisfied. Highly abnormal behavior. Verse 15, he allows her to glean not just near the women now. Now he tells her to glean actually among the women. So he's moved her from a place of privilege to a place of even greater privilege. And verse 16, he tells them to intentionally drop some for her to pick up. Not only has God provided for Ruth and Naomi, but he's done so generously. And he's used Boaz to do it. It points certainly to Boaz's character. Boaz recognizes the heart of God for those in need, and he seeks to emulate this in his life. He doesn't simply stick to the letter of the law, but he moves to the depths of the spirit of the law. He has a heart of compassion and generosity. He sees the things that God values as it relates to his profession, and he emulates those things in his own life. I wonder if you do that. I wonder if you see the things that God values and make them the thing that you value. Now, certainly we all do that to some extent, particularly our favorite things, the things that come natural to us or easy to us. But compassion and generosity are things that don't come all that easy to many of us. One of my favorite definitions of compassion, you've heard me say it before, is that compassion is when your pain is in my heart. When your pain is in my heart, you become compassionate for the other person. And I read recently the story of two kids from Cleveland in a great story of compassion. Maybe you've heard of it before. 2009, ESPN aired a story about D'Artagnan Crockett and Leroy Sutton. These were two high school students from inner city Cleveland. And Crockett and Sutton were teammates on the Lincoln West High School wrestling team. Crockett is legally blind, and he was often seen carrying Sutton, who was a double amputee, on his back. The show was produced by Lisa Fenn, who was an ESPN veteran. She'd done stories about all kinds of famous athletes in the past. But when she finished this piece about Crockett and Sutton, she couldn't leave these two boys alone. She took it upon herself to help the one with no legs, being carried by the one who couldn't see, get to college. She raised donations from around the world. She coordinated college visits. She ensured that the boys were well fed every day. And thanks to her efforts, Crockett became a bronze medalist in judo in the Paralympic Games in London, and Sutton would eventually become the first member of his family to graduate from college. And after all the media hoopla died down, Leroy Sutton quietly asked her, "Why did you stay?" To which she replied, "I love you." And he said, I thought you'd say that. But why? Why did you stick around and do everything that you did?" And Lisa Fenn would go on to write, "I grew up on the other side of Cleveland, the white side. My parents scrounged up enough money for private school to protect me from the public schools and those people. But D'Artagnan and Leroy eased me in graciously. They opened up about their struggles. D'Artagnan with great eagerness, as I think he had waited his entire life for someone to really want to know him and to truly see him. Leroy's revelations emerged much more reluctantly. He had been emotionally abandoned too many times before. But both began to believe that perhaps I genuinely cared. I stayed because I would not be the next on the list of people who walked out and over their trust. I stayed because we only get one life and we don't truly live it until we give it away. I stayed because we can change the world only when we enter into another's world. I stayed because I love you." Compassion is when your pain is in my heart. And Ruth is flabbergasted at Boaz's compassion and generosity. In verse 10, we see her exclaim, "How is this that I have found favor in your eyes? I'm a foreigner." And it's her way of saying, why after all of this, why are you staying? And he gives two reasons. Reason number one is because he had heard of what she had done. And reason number two is because there's a sense in which he desires to emulate the character of God himself. Firstly, he heard of what Ruth had done for Naomi after her husband died, how she clung to her, how she committed herself to loyalty, even in this foreign land of Israel. And he says this very unique phrase in verse 12. He says, "May the Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given to you by the Lord." Now that poses sort of an important question for many Christians. And maybe we get to the center of that tension point by looking at the two poles. On one side, biblically speaking, and even in this story, we see that God blesses those who do what he wants them to do. He blesses the people who pattern their lives after the things that he would desire of them. Now, the danger, of course, in this belief, or the temptation for many of us, is then to say, well, God blesses good people, he damns bad people, and he is the God that just responds constantly to my behavior in this life. And so if I do bad things, he flings lightning bolts at me, and if I do good things, he hands out lollipops. Here's the other pole. The other pole of this is that we know biblically that the greatest blessing in our life as a Christian is found completely apart from anything behaviorally that we do. that God saves people from their sins. He gives them eternal blessing and life with him, independent of behavior, but only through faith, because he chooses to love us and give grace to us. Now, what's the temptation on this side? The temptation on this side is, well, once I've made my profession of faith, then I don't really have to care that much anymore about how I live the rest of my life. I mean, my ticket is punched. I'm all set. I walked the aisle. I said the prayer in youth group. I kneeled by my bedside. I committed myself to the Lord, and now I can drink, smoke, and chew, and go with girls who do. Romans 6, Paul talks about this, doesn't he? What should we say? Should we sin that grace may abound? May it never be, he says. So here, bringing it back to Ruth chapter 2, we see both God's sovereign, providential care, independent of anything Ruth and Naomi has done. He has looked out for them and put them in a position of his blessing and his privilege. And at the very same time, there's a recognition that Ruth is rewarded. He honors those who live in a manner that's pleasing to him. And the application is simply this: trust God and trust him alone for the saving work in your life. And then make it your mission to live in a manner that's pleasing to him. To have your values reflect his values. To have your agenda reflect his agenda. To have his character reflected in the day in and day out happenings of your life. Because it is not insignificant. He actually honors those who live righteously. He honors Ruth in this way because she is reflecting a God in some ways that she's now just for the very first time coming to know. The second reason that Boaz blesses this young woman is that because he himself is trying to reflect something that he knows about God. And at the end of his blessing in verse 12, look at it again with me. He says, "May the Lord give you full reward, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Boaz is saying, it's safe here. It's safe because of this God that we serve. Ruth is a widow. It's safe. The mighty one takes the little starling underneath his wings and he protects her. He provides for her. He gives her safety. She's a foreigner, but it's safe. She is needy, but it's safe because she has come to take refuge in God himself. And in doing so, there is no safer place that you can be in this world than taking refuge in him. My friends, that is God that we worship and that we serve. That is a God that loves you. Thanks be to God who says, "Come to me and I will give you rest." The God who says, when you are weighed down with the turmoils and the difficulties of this world, it's safe here. The God that says, when you are riddled with guilt and pain and the weight of the world is on your shoulders because of your very own actions and your very own sin, it's safe here. My forgiveness for you is free. My blessing for you is abundant. I will protect you. Boaz is reflecting something he knows about God himself. And so the story comes to its conclusion, at least in the middle part here. And we take a step back from the middle of the gleaning of the grain field back to the mother-in-law, Naomi. In all of her bitterness, we see that God is beginning not only to provide for Ruth and Naomi, but to bless Ruth and Naomi, and he begins restoring Naomi from that place of being empty toward fullness again. And in doing so, he gives a glimpse, just a glimpse, of the Redeemer that is to come. Look with me at verse 17. Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. And then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up and she went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned, and she also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you glean today?" Hear it with the inflection. She comes home with a ton of food and leftover lunch for a poor, hungry widow. "Where did you glean today? And where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." And so she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz." And Naomi said to the daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Naomi also said to her, "The man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers." And Ruth the Moabite said, "Besides, he said to me, 'You shall keep close to my young men until they have finished all my harvest.'" And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women, lest in another field you be assaulted." So she kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvests. And she lived with her mother-in-law. So not only did Ruth come home with an ample amount of food, but when she hears how she obtained it and who she obtained it with, her disposition toward God changes. Naomi, just days ago, is saying, "Don't call me by my name. It means pleasantness. Call me Mara. I am bitter." And now, her expression, her disposition, moves from bitterness toward recognition of the blessing that is in her life and actually thanksgiving toward Boaz. This is what happens when you are released from bitterness. This is a miracle of God happening in her very midst. It's the same miracle of God that happened even in a lot of lives last week, as many people came forward to ask prayer for the bitterness in their own lives. When God releases you of that, you begin to see him for who he is and what he's really doing. And we see this in verse 20. The woman that just a moment ago is talking about being bitter is now saying, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead," meaning his kindness has not forsaken me. God in his compassion has taken Ruth from full when she went away to Moab to empty when she was in Moab and returned to Bethlehem. And now he's starting to fill her back up again. And we see that God provides for Naomi and Ruth because he cares for the needy and he blesses the righteous. Why does God do this? He cares for the needy and he blesses the righteous. He cares for the needy and he blesses the righteous. So what are we to learn from this part of the story? We learn something about ourselves and we learn something about God. We learn, first of all, that both Ruth and Boaz serve as an example of moral character to us. Ruth, in her hard work, in her love, in her loyalty, in her humility, these are characteristics that we are to emulate. Boaz is clearly a man's man, but yet he's gentle, he's compassionate, he's generous. He makes God's values his values. He uses his wealth to care for those around him. If you want an example of moral character, look to Ruth and look to Boaz. And it's often said that women, you want an example to follow, look to Ruth. Men, you want an example to follow, look to Boaz. Those of you who are in need, you want an example to follow, look to Ruth. Those of you who are wealthy, look to Boaz. These are people who are models in this respect. But we also learn something about God. We see that we have a great God who cares for the needy and he blesses the righteous. Some might call it luck that a young woman finds herself in a field of a man who takes notice of her, cares for her, who provides generously for her, and who we have now the very inklings, the very beginnings of a love story beginning to emerge. The romantic ones among us might even call that fate. But this is neither luck nor fate. It's providence. The behind-the-scenes working of a loving God, caring for his people. And if you are here today and you're a Christian, you need to know that in a variety of ways, behind the scenes, he is guiding for and caring for you. God provides for Naomi and Ruth because he cares for the needy and because he blesses the righteous. And in case you missed it, there's just a glimpse of the Redeemer to be found in verse 20 as Naomi proclaims that this man, Boaz, is a close relative of ours. He is one of our redeemers.
Thanks, Pastor. That wraps up part two of a message from Dr. Nick Gatzke called Moving from Empty to Full. Be sure to listen next time as we move on to the third chapter of the book of Ruth. Also, check out our website. Go to openingthebible.org, openingthebible.org. We'd love for you to search through all the archives we have and see what information we have to offer. But also, would you prayerfully consider being a financial supporter of this ministry? We need people like you to keep the mission going. Again, go to openingthebible.org. Opening the Bible is a teaching ministry of and is sponsored by Old North Church of Canfield, Ohio.